Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of June 19th, and with me, as usual, is Jim Allen. How's it going, buddy, on a Sunday night? Woohoo!
Woohoo! It's going well. Speaking to you from beautiful downtown Koenji as we record this remotely. Yeah, a little rainy, but what a great week for baseball.
Exactly. I'm glad, you know, I contacted you this week, and I said, look, I'm going to have to sacrifice some sleep. And we're going to have to wait until Interleague is done and tape the show so that we can get the games. And what a great weekend of baseball.
And it's still not done.
Well, it's not done, but it's finished. How's that?
Okay, hear that, Bay Stars? Well, we're sticking a fork in you. Yeah, Oryx and DeNA, we're sticking a fork in you.
Yeah, fork you both.
Oh, you can't say that.
Not on TV, but we're not on TV. There are no FCC rules here. All right, on this week's show, we've got a chat with Matt Duffy of the Marines. We're going to discuss Lotte, Interleague, and a whole lot more. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so on Saturday, I took a knee, literally. I did my first interview on bended knee. I felt like Colin Kaepernick on Saturday at Tokyo Dome.
What'd you bring, a ring or something?
No, I felt like I should have been doing something more, but no. Matt Duffy of the Marines and I, we went into the mirror room for the visiting team. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if he thought I didn't want to sit down because I was going to mess up my pants, but you know they've got artificial turf back in there, and I don't know why he didn't want to sit down. I think he was thinking of me, and so he took a knee. So I took a knee. So we did this whole thing on one knee facing each other, if you can imagine that. And he,
I trying hard not to.
Trying hard not to. Okay. When I found that he was joining the Marines, I looked him up on the internet, and I remembered this kid, this young Matt Duffy player who played with the San Francisco Giants.
Yay, who?
Yeah, and I thought, now this can't be the same guy. And we talked about the fact that he has a name that the same as three other guys who played in the major leagues. And there is another left-handed pitcher by the name of Matt Duffy, and it's not him either. This is the Matt
Duffy. There was a former Giants pitcher named Hugh Duffy.
Well, we're not talking about Hughes.
No, we're not.
Yours,
oh, you mean there were three? There were three Matt Duffys.
Matt Duffys, exactly.
Wow, it's like a shell game.
It's like a shell game, yeah. So, anyway, Matt, obviously a first-year player with the Marines. He and the Marines have been struggling to get their share of hits, let alone runs all season. But we'll get to that. We spoke in the mirror room, and my man Kazuya Fukuda came into the room to get loose as we're in there, and you'll also hear another player who came in looking for something, couldn't find it. I think one of the players brought his wife and young child, and you might hear both of their voices in the background. But it was a great chat, so let's take a listen. All right, well, we are glad to be joined by Matt Duffy of the Lotte Marines today. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us.
No problem.
All right, so what made you decide to come to Japan, that this would be a good place for you to continue your career?
Yeah, it's not something that happened overnight. There was kind of some talks back and forth between the team, my agent, and myself this offseason. And when I got this DFA'd, so basically let go by the Astros, I got claimed by the Rangers, finished the previous season up with them, and then in the off season I was, I wasn't on a 40-man roster, so I wasn't protected, and the Marines had some interest. I kind of looked into it, talked to my agent. We thought this would be a good fit. So after a little bit of research and some back and forth with family and my agent, we decided this was the right call for me, and I'm glad I did it.
What kind of research did you do?
Research, just looked up about the league, kind of past players, growing up, coming up through the minors, you hear of, and I've met some guys that have come over here, none that I'm really close with, but, guys that I kind of fit that same profile, kind of the bubble big league player that is, a little bit older. So I knew that it might maybe always would be an option for me. When I was kind of coming up, looking into the future, and it's kind of, came down to it, that it really was an option for me. So, I had to jump on it, and a change of scenery, a chance to play, every day over here was, was something I was looking forward to, so I'm glad I did it, like I said.
Oh, what did you find out about the Marines in particular?
The Marines, I knew the stadium was really windy. I knew the, you know, I know they play in an outdoor, I saw they played in an outdoor field, but, you know, I looked up some of the guys and, you know, past foreign players that have played over here, some for the Marines, and I know they had a... the stretch there with Bobby Valentine.
Right.
And I just did a little research, kind of the whole, you know, just punching into Google type thing. So,
Google, research. Exactly. All right.
So.
Hey, that's what it is these
yeah,
days.
Yeah, exactly. That was it. And, you know, I'm open to new experiences. I like to try new things and challenge myself. And I knew this would be a great challenge. And like I said, once I decided to come over here, I was all in.
Speaking of challenges, what has been the biggest challenge in your adjustments in MPB?
Yeah, it's the style of pitching, and I'm sure you guys hear that a lot from all the foreign players that come over here. It's just...
don't say they pitch backwards. No, you would have found that in your research
before you came over. Yeah, you know before you come over here that, you know, they're just not going to give you, you know, guys aren't... Like back home, no one's just going to throw you a fastball right down the middle. They're going to make you earn, earn your spot on first base, and... you know, so I think the biggest thing is they don't, you know, they're going to let you prove that you won't get yourself out. They move the ball in and out just off the plate, and they're, all the pitchers here are, they have, you know, they can spot up really, really well. And when they miss off the plate. They rarely miss over the plate. So, and on the flip side, coming over here and wanting to help the team and produce and put up numbers, you know, you put some pressure on yourself if you're only human. So you know, sometimes you expand and you get out, you know, you might chase a little bit and try to do too much, because you want to help out, you know, help the team so badly. So, it's kind of a combination of those two things where I think you can get in trouble and, you know, right now it's a battle. You know, physically I feel good. But you know, they're, you know, no one's going to give in. And just,
oh, no, yeah.
So you gotta work at it every day. So I've always been a hard worker and someone who shows up and just tries to continue to compete. So that's all you can really do. But the guys, the talent here is tremendous. And it's been a challenge, but I embrace it fully.
Yeah, I've been seeing you making better and more steady contact. So let's hope that continues. Now, some of the adjustments obviously include the umpiring. What do you think about the expansion of replay reviews here in Japan?
Yeah, I don't. You'd have to kind of tell me again what the rules are there. I think it's just home runs,
anything home that run. Hits the fence.
Sure.
And then home base.
Okay. Yeah.
Plays at the plate.
Yeah. I think reviews are good. I think, you know, at the end of the day, you just want the right call, whatever that is. I like the review. I think the play that, you know, gets reviewed the most is the safer out at first base. That's a tough call for an umpire. In live game speed. So, you know, if they get it wrong, you know, that's really tough, just as long as it gets right on a review. I don't think we have that.
Nope.
Right?
Nope.
So I think that would be a nice one to add. I think reviews are good for the game. I think, you know, it's been going well back home from what I can tell. It can slow the game down a little bit. And I know, you know, you want the pace of play to move along, but all in all, I'm for the reviews.
Okay. Now, this team usually goes to the playoffs a lot. How has this struggle been for you guys this year?
Yeah, it's tough. I think, you know, we got off to a tough start 0-3 right away in SoftBank, and I look back to that series. Those were hard-fought games. We were in each one of them, and then, you know, we just couldn't get that big hit. You know, we had a few, you know, unlucky bounces for sure, but that's baseball. You kind of got to make your own luck sometimes. But it's definitely been an uphill battle for our guys. I know this team works hard. We're out there early, and guys do extra work all the time. So it's definitely not for a lack of effort, but it's been tough. And the guys here take a lot of pride in you know, providing a you know, W's for the fans, because we get tremendous support. So. It definitely wears on guys, and
you can see it.
Yeah, we have a long season still to go, but you know, we're just one day at a time is the only way to approach it, and you know, that's what we're gonna do.
All right, so there's obviously been a lack of power. What kind of, when they brought you over, and I looked at some of your minor league numbers, did they expect you to be a power hitter?
Yeah, I think you know, I think that's what they look for foreign guys. You know, you see around the league, most guys hit in the middle of the lineup, and they want you to, you know, drive in runs. And, I mean, it's tough to, you know, people, you know, I think it's pretty unrealistic for, you know, anyone to expect a home run every time you, you know, go to the plate. You're just trying to make solid contact. And, you know, if you're a power hitter, you know, usually you just try to hit the ball in the air, and over the course of the season, you're gonna hit a few homers. So that's something that, you know, I think most hitters would tell you, that, you know, you're going up there trying to hit the ball as hard as you can with a compact, you know, balanced swing, and the results are the results. So
right.
That's all you can really do. But yeah, I mean, if guys are on base, I want to drive them in. I love to hit with runners on, and you know, do what I can to help the team win.
All right, now we saw big Willie Mo Pena here now, and that's the kind of guy who can obviously change things. Yeah. What kind of dynamic does he add to the lineup?
Yeah, he's a huge presence physically, obviously, when you see him. And then also, you know, you look at his track record over here, I know he's had success. So he's comfortable with the league, and you know, he can change the game with one swing of the bat. So having him in any lineup, you know, I know the opposing team looks at that and says, man, we got a game plan for this guy. He's dangerous with runners on. You know, like you said, one swing, he can do some damage. So from what I've, you know, the little I've got to interact with him so far, he's a great guy. He's you know, I know he's going to keep it loose. He has a lot of fun, it seems like, and you know, I think he'll let the talking, you know, do it with the bat. So I wish him all the best.
Now, a lot of guys come to Japan and they expect to see a bunch of Ichiros running around. Are there any guys you've seen, any hitters you've seen who really impressed you?
Yeah, oh my God, yeah, there's been a bunch of guys that have been super impressive. I mean, we got to face Ohtani at the beginning of the year when he was hitting, and
you can't go there, that's the big
obvious. Yeah, no, I know. He turned on a fastball, though, that was just under his hands, that was kind of the one pitch when I was standing at third. You know, I said, geez, this dude's the real deal. That, you know, I haven't really seen many guys that can get the barrel to the ball and keep it fair with power and hit it out like that. So that was kind of a light bulb moment for me to say, okay, this guy's the real deal as a hitter too. I knew he could pitch.
Right.
But every team, I mean, all these guys, there's plenty of guys in this league that can go over and play in the big leagues. It's full of talent. You know, Rackton, I'm just trying to think right now, if the kid Mogi from Rackton,
right, yeah,
he impressed me. I know he's a young guy, he just has a great feel for the strike zone, and he's definitely got some pop. He's a great guy to have at the top of the lineup. I'm trying to think, you know, there's been guys, I mean, every team has players where I sit there and say, wow, they, you know, this guy's the real deal. So, and I knew that coming over here. I knew it wasn't, you know, this league is second to none. So the only thing that makes a difference, in my opinion, from the big leagues is the, you know, the superstar talent, the guys that are just physically gifted, you know, much more so than some players over here. But but other than that, these guys can play. They're really good.
What have you noticed about the Central League and playing during Interleague?
Yeah, it's definitely a different game, because with that pitcher hitting, you know, those first five innings, you can get out of jams a lot easier. And you can pitch around guys to get to the pitcher's spot, and the bunt, and you know, bunting and bunt defense becomes a bigger priority. So it's definitely a different game. It's cool though. It's cool to, you know, kind of see both sides of it. But yeah, we've been in some good games over here, and you know, it's nice when we're on the side of it where the pitcher comes up with the bases loaded and our guy can get out of the jam. So
it definitely
you gotta you know, game plan a little differently.
All right, I always say that the fans really don't care. The fans really don't care where you are in the standings. A lot of times they come to the games to see you win. So right. What can guys expect, or fans expect, as you guys go through the rest of the season?
Yeah, I want the fans to know that, you know, these guys in here, they work their tail off. There's a lot of work that they put in. They, you know, even after the game, long hours after the game, and they're working hard. So, you know, we're doing everything we can to you know, put a winning product out on the field and win games. And we, you know, I speak for the guys when I say that, you know, the support's tremendous, and you know, it can give you, you know, a nice adrenaline kick when these fans are going crazy. So, you know, we want to win. It's not for, we're trying, and hopefully we can right this ship and make a playoff push.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you.
All right. Much appreciated, Matt. What a great guy. What a great guy.
All right. Thanks, Matt.
All right. So for me, the thing that stayed in my head after this fact, after this interview, was a couple things, but I'll let you go first. I'll let you go first. Oh,
you let me go first. Thanks a lot. That's our protocol.
That's our protocol. I remember it.
I know you do. I wouldn't think anything else. But first, I guess the first thing that comes to me is the older guys. You know, I understand where he's coming from. You know, if you've got 12 major league at bats, you know, 28 is old.
Mm-hmm.
But 28 for a player coming to Japan is really, it's not the best time, but it's almost the best time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the best is to, you know, be somebody like Brandon Laird and come when you're 26.
Right.
But, or 24, or being even younger, but those opportunities are few and far between, because A, they're usually looking for people who have not worn out their welcome, but who are no longer wear a prospect label,
right,
in the States, so they're available, which means you usually don't find guys of any quality under the age of 24.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you know, they want somebody who's actually done something somewhere. So that combination usually brings the, you know, we used to see most guys coming from MLB late 20s, early 30s, mid 30s. I think that's changed a lot, but still, but anyway, but I was thinking, yeah, 28 is not really old. It's gotcha. On the younger side.
Yeah, I think actually when we talked to, I think it was Matt Clark a couple mm-hmm. of years back when he talked about that aspect of not being a prospect anymore. And a couple other guys have mentioned that, you know, once they get to about, I guess, close to 30, when they start to approach 30, that they're no longer considered young, A, and they're no mm-hmm. longer considered prospects. And
well, teams, you know, but it's different. You know, if you've got 1,000 major league at bats under your belt,
exactly.
You know, 28 is a good age for you, but if you've got 12, it's like, you know, because now we're thinking, at what point are we going to keep giving this, you know, are we going to keep this guy in the holding pattern that where he might be useful for us? So anyway, yeah, it was interesting. And I particularly, you know, other than him thinking, you know, saying he was old, which I find that I'm more than twice as old as he is, I found amusing.
Let's not start counting.
Okay. Well, that's, you know, well, I have to learn to count in order to do that. But I think he gave us the line of the week,
which was,
you know, he explained that dynamic of arriving in Japan really well. You know, you want to come and do well, and it's easy to put extra pressure on yourself and not try to do too much and not try to chase pitches. And the other part, and the line of the week came just before that, where he said about Japanese pitchers, they make you prove that you won't get yourself out.
Oh yeah, that was a good line. And I thought about it briefly for a minute, and I thought, yeah, because a lot of guys will do that for you. They will chase pitches, or
sure,
they'll try to guess and wait for their pitch, hunt fastballs or those kinds of things, and then just stare at pitches that go right past them over the plate and go and sit down. So yeah, that does happen. So yeah, that is a good line. You're right.
So anyway, I had that thought, and then the other thing, which I'm going to save, we'll get on when we're talking about the Marines a little bit. I'll just hint at.
Okay.
This is a foreshadowing.
We need, you know,
he said, we do indeed. Exactly. Jaws music or something. But, you know, it kills me because one of the things in Japan is that, well, everybody, of course, wants to show effort. And everybody is consciously trying to get out of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the Marines are, you know, and he said it was a little bit of bad luck. I think there's a lot more of bad luck to it than he mentioned, because it's abysmally bad luck if it's bad luck.
Yes.
And they're trying so hard, and I don't doubt that indeed. What I doubt is the direction in which they're trying hard.
Mm.
Okay. And I think, okay, so we'll
leave
it at that and let you, so we're going to be talking about direction.
Okay.
And go ahead.
All right.
What'd you like?
Well, for me, it was, I don't know, it just rang out when he said it. And then I want to get the, you know, I don't want to take these guys' time too much. And he didn't look busy. And we talked after the interview. He asked me where I was from and all that stuff. So I thought he had more time. But when he said he didn't know exactly what the replay rule was, it just kind of rang out to me. Like, what is Lotte doing here? You expect your players to perform and compete, but they're not well-versed on the rules. And not that it's a big one, but he should know that. And it's not his duty to find out what it is, because how would he know that they're different? It's the team's responsibility to tell him what the rules are, because he has to know, okay, look, if you go to home plate and you slide and it's a really close play and you think you're safe, let us know so we can demand a replay so that it can be, you know, reviewed and determine whether you are safe or not. And I mean, I want you to tell me if you honestly think you were safe or not. Don't lie. Don't say, well, I think I was safe. I mean, you know, I think that's important. Now, obviously, he hasn't been, I guess, involved in that many plays at the plate, but I just thought that was kind of nutty that he didn't know, and I don't blame him. I blame the Marines. That rang out.
Well,
yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. Like, well, that was one of your themes this week, so I'm not surprised.
Well, yeah, I guess we'll get to that.
More force. Doo-doo. Okay.
And so, and also, I guess it was interesting. I said, tell me some of the guys you have been impressed with. And I just think it's so hard for these first-year foreign players to come up with the names of guys. And I think, I honestly believe that there are some guys out there he knows can probably play, maybe get jobs in the U.S. and play in the major leagues. But when you're a pitcher and you have to go through the lineup a lot, I think you remember those guys' names a little bit easier. But when you're a position player and you're just trying to remember what pitcher does what and you know where they're moving you on defense, you're not particularly thinking about who it is or what their name is or what they do so much as what they do and where to be. And so he couldn't really come up with the names other than Shohei Ohtani. I thought it was big props for Egor Omogi of the Eagles.
Yeah.
He gave him some recognition there. But
you know what? Everybody picks out Mogi.
Yeah.
I asked Brandon Laird and he said, you know, first thing out of the shoot, I said, what about Rockton? He says, like, Mogi, wow, get out of here.
Yeah, I mean, I love the guy. And he's one of the few Japanese players who's got like a little hitch in his swing who's really making it, you know. Most of the guys have a really smooth mechanics, but he's got that little hitch. And you don't see that a lot in the Japanese players, and he's still getting it done. Most of the foreign players who come here with a hitch, they end up leaving, except for, I think the guy who had the most success recently was Lee Daho. And other guys I don't remember having much success, but Mogi's doing it with that little crank in his swing. But anyway, I thought that was interesting, and I thought I thought that was obviously he's going to remember some of the pitchers. But I asked him for hitters, and he couldn't come up with the names right away. And like I said, I don't blame him. I think it's just a reflection of the position that he plays and the fact that he's trying to beat the pitchers, not so much the other hitters.
No, I thought that was interesting. I doubt if he hadn't heard about Shohei Ohtani before he arrived. So that didn't surprise me. So yeah, he gets a star for bringing up Mogi.
Definitely.
The other thing, I guess the other one I'll just touch on is, you know, you asked when he mentioned the bunts and he said, oh yeah, it's interesting to see that from both sides. It's like, I think that interest has already waned.
Well, obviously, yeah. And he talked about the difference between the Central League and the Pacific League. And I was having a Twitter discussion with, I can't remember, it's Steve from the blogger with the...
Yeah, Steve from Chiba, love Marines.
Right. And he was saying that there's plenty of strategy that goes on in the Pacific League. And
I saw that wasn't my point.
My point is that there was more in the Central League because you have to figure out when you're going to take pitchers out, if you're going to take them out, and there's a little bit more.
I'm more on the DH side because you have more options that create, as opposed to Well, we're losing by 4 runs in the 5th inning. Should we keep our starting pitcher in to hit?
Well, that sounds like a discussion for another day. Indeed. I'm thinking.
Whereas in the Pacific League, you know, obviously the interesting thing is like, and I'll just throw this out there for everybody. You know, if it was a case of, you know, what do you do with the pitcher? Bunt. But if you have all these automatic bunts in the lineup, how come the Central League has so many fewer bunts than the Pacific League? When you have a guy who's basically his only offensive purpose for being there is to bunt. So, good question. So I'll leave that to the listeners to come up with some ideas.
Okay. All right. Well, let's talk about the Marines now. They, in the meantime, are performing far worse than anyone imagined, I think, in the preseason. They lost on Sunday. It was their 4th 5-game skid. They dropped 25 games under 500. And there's still more than half of the season to go because they played 66 games.
On Saturday, they had lost 4 in a row for the 6th time. That's certainly a sign that your season is going south.
South?
They're
not going south. It has arrived in south.
It's already Antarctic.
Yeah, they're going to take it to new levels. The last time I looked, they were last in runs scored, and last in ERA, team ERA. The run differential was 129, and I think the next worst team in NPB is Chunichi at 60, so that's less than half. The starters have struggled, including Ayumu Ishikawa. He had to be sent to the farm this season to work on his pitching. Hideaki Wakui has been wobbly. He's been okay. In fact, they had won 4 consecutive games that he started before the Giants beat him on Friday, and they got shut out that game, and Wakui gave up 4 runs in 5 innings, so he just wasn't good. They generally don't hit. The team batting average was my weight as a freshman in high school in 1978 or something. So, I mean, it's not a good situation there. I don't know if I really believe that they can come back and get a playoff spot, but I want to because, like I said, they're more than half. There's more than half the season left to go, so if they can right the ship and if they start beating the teams that are above them, which is all of them, they can get back into position where they can see their way to a playoff spot. I just don't know if they can get there or not.
I would be highly doubtful, and it's not, again, for the lack of effort, but I would think, you know, there's something weird about this season. The Marines have been, you know, they've pretty much owned third place for a while, and they're really good at third place. You know, they've you know, last year was the first time the Marines had ever lost the first stage of a playoff.
Right.
They always win that first stage, whether it's at home or on the road. So I don't think that has anything to do with anything, but I wanted to bring that out, that they basically own third place in the Pacific League, and they've owned it a long time. And I want to go back, actually, 10 years ago, exactly 10 years ago. Now, at that time, Tsutomu Ito was the manager of the Cebu Lions.
Right.
And in 2002, he won the, excuse me, in 2004, he won the Pacific League as a rookie manager. 2005, they finished well. 2006, they finished well. And then in the 2006 offseason, something happened. And it was like night and day for Ito. One day, he was the nice, smiling Tsutomu Ito. You know, we all remembered all his years as he'd only retired a few years earlier. Mm-hmm. And then the next day, he looked like he aged 10 years. And what happened was the Cebu Lions announced, they had a new president, and he said, he heard a rumor about the Lions paying somebody. He says, let's clean this up. Let's clean up Japanese baseball. We don't want people talking about, you know, we're going to admit if we did anything wrong. So he launched a blue ribbon panel and an investigation. And
right,
they announced
that.
Right. And they announced that in the past, the Lions had had this particular high school player they had paid money to
under the table. Yes.
Right. They'd paid money to under the table so he'd play for Cebu. And I have to think that that was Ito, because the circumstances of his ending his high school career were very shady.
Mm-hmm.
He quit his high school in Fukuoka, moved to Tokorozawa, where the Lions are located, and went to night school. Finished high school in night school, and during that time he was working in for the Lions as like a doing a part-time job with the Lions during the daytime.
Mm-hmm. Babysitting the automatic sprinklers or something to that effect, probably.
Something to that effect, yes. So anyway, so Ito had what I refer to as his first Leland Palmer season.
Meaning,
Leland Palmer was a TV character who basically was possessed by a demon and his hair turned white after he killed his daughter.
Great.
And
this
is from Twin Peaks.
Oh.
I may have some of the details wrong. But,
okay, yeah. I never saw an episode of that show.
The point being that suddenly he went from being this mild-mannered person to being, victimized by these horrible unseen events. And his hair turned white the next day after his daughter died. And it's like Ito became a different person. In 2007, the Lions went in the tank. And when Alex Cabrera, and things just got weirder and weirder and weirder. When Alex Cabrera had some injuries, Ito sent him to a faith healer. I'm not kidding. And I have to think something weird's going on, because this is a team that's not bad. Okay, they're not great, but they're identical in many ways. They're superior to the Marines we've seen in recent seasons. Mm-hmm. I think at least as good, but everything's going wrong. And I think when you see somebody, the team working so hard, you have to think what's lacking is not effort, but direction.
Mm.
So maybe they need somebody to say, to sit down, sit the players down and say, just like cool it, but if you're under pressure, if things are going nuts, you can't do that.
Yeah. I talked to, they have two pitching coaches. I talked to Masahide Kobayashi, the former standout closer.
Ah, yeah.
Who also pitched in the big leagues. And I talked
to him. And Kobayashi, did he give you a straightforward answer, or did he give you one of his zen answers?
He gave me maybe half and half answers. But I asked him, I said, what do you see going on with this pitching staff? And he said, we have a collection of kids. They're just young kids. And I said, a lot of the guys have been here now. And he says, they're still going through the growing phase, especially the guys in the rotation.
That Wakui kid, he'll get his stuff together somewhere.
But after Wakui, you got guys who don't have years, a long resume, let's say.
It's still
fairly short. And true. The bullpen is doing okay. But it's the rotation that's really, I would say, save for Wakui and Karakawa, those guys have been there kind of a long time. Ishikawa hasn't been there all that long. Futaki.
Yeah, he's very Futaki young.
Is really young. I said the same thing to him. I said, you're basically working with a team that's been to the playoffs the past 2 years, and the pitching staff really hasn't changed that much. And he said, yeah, but just things are not coming together. We'll do something really well with the starting pitchers, and then the bullpen will have trouble. Or we'll do something really bad with the starting pitchers, but the bullpen will come in and they'll pitch really well, but we won't score enough runs to overcome it. And things are just not meshing. And
That really is part of the problem, is the runs. I think that's the key problem.
Well, yeah, they mostly don't score. And then when they do score, they seem to, like today's game, they get outscored. And today's game was a really weird situation for me. And I tweeted it. I'm sure you saw it.
I did.
And I tweeted it before a pitch was thrown. And he might. I don't know what his numbers are, and I don't really care because he's really clutch. And this was a 12 inning game. The Giants ended up winning 7-5. And yeah, of course, the manager Ito walks Casey McGee, because I think, and this is the only thing I could figure out, is that he wanted to set up a double play situation. He had Yuta Omine on the mound, and I think he's trying to end the game with one pitch, basically trying to get a double play to end it. And he got it ended on one pitch, but it was a three-run home run.
Hmm.
And I just thought it was walking McGee to get to a guy who's just, it's a left-right matchup, so it favors the Giants. And I just didn't think it was very smart at all. And those are the things that are happening. I mean, Daichi Suzuki had hit a home run, a two-run home run in the eighth inning, mm-hmm. and gotten them even. And they couldn't, the bullpen pitched really well to get to that situation. And they used everybody, I think.
Yeah, and they had a two-run lead going into the bottom of the 12th.
They have a two-run lead, and here they say, oh, well, let's face Mr. Clutch, you know, and see if we can get out of this ball game. And they had done this before in the ball game. They had walked him. They'd walked McGee to get to Kamei, and Kamei didn't come through. But, have you noticed this year? There's been a lot of crying in baseball. And, you know, Kamei was
crying.
In tears. Yes, all-out crying. Kamei was in tears. He was a bumbling mess on the podium trying to do the interview.
Where's Tom Hanks when you need him?
Where's Tom Hanks when we need to get him on here? I mean, it doesn't, I don't know. I guess last week I was complaining that we didn't see enough.
So who was crying?
Let's go back. I can only give you the recent guys, but I know it's been more than this. Toru Murata of Nippon Ham was crying as he got his first win.
Okay.
I think that was this past week. Shun Yamaguchi was crying because he won for Yomiuri. Yoshinori Sato said he wasn't going to cry after he got a win. And I think he didn't, but he seemed like he was anyway, you know, kind of a hidden way. Yudai Ono of Chunichi was crying after he got his first
win. For what?
The guys win a game for the first time in forever, and they're just breaking down. And then I don't know what Kamei was going through today. I think he was just happy to come through. He said it was his first time hitting a walk-off home run like that, so maybe that was it. I don't know. It's just been a lot of crying in baseball. I can't complain one week that when I'm not seeing enough passion, and then complain the next week when I see all these tears. But does it have to be tears? Can't we just see some joy? Enjoy your baseball. Don't cry about it.
Okay, good advice from Mr. Gibson.
All right, we're getting off topic. Anyway, I did see an article right after the game that the Marines lost today, and a front office official said, well, we're not planning any changes at this time, talking about with the team, and I'm assuming management, field manager, that position in particular. So he got the old vote of confidence, so that's looking pretty grim.
Which means he's gone tomorrow.
Right.
Usually, you know, in football or soccer, right. Usually the kiss of death is when the team says he's got our complete confidence. That's the day you know that you might as well just prepare such and such manager quit or was fired.
Yeah. But that is the... That is what's happening in the Marines' life right now. They just, nothing's going right. I think, you know, they get two runs in the top of the 12th. They give up four in the bottom. It just, you know, those are the kinds of things that just seem to be happening to this team. And so when Kobayashi said, yeah, we're not meshing, I'm like, you know, not in any phase. And when they do have a momentary meshing moment, and they have a lapse with the manager or something like that. That's, you know, I didn't blame that game on Omine. I think he was, you know, he's trying to get ahead and with a pitch, and it didn't work out for him. And of course, Kamei powdered that ball. I think there was nothing left. But but you know, those are the things that are happening to the Marines. It's been happening all season. They just can't seem to walk in a straight line.
I don't think the Marines are going to change managers in the middle of the season because that hasn't happened. It hasn't happened in about 20 years. So
well, you let them get 35 games under 500, and I think somebody will just kind of just back away quietly with a bag over their head or something. Somebody's going to leave. I can't believe they're going to just let that go.
Okay. But yeah, it would be unusual for them, you know. Anyway.
Okay. All right, making a smooth, seamless transition, I want to talk about interleague play and the fact that the Pacific League is going to win because we still have one more game left. I believe they're going to play it on Monday, tomorrow, when we release this. So the Pacific League is leading the way with one game to play. And the Carp, your choice and mine for the best record among CL teams, had a chance to win the title outright and joined the Giants as the only Central League teams to ever win Interleague, but the Hawks ran off with the title. snooze, snooze, nothing new. They won their seventh time. Now they're not calling it a interleague title anymore, but for our purposes, we are. So
they are, because they get more prize money.
Well, they just said that, what do they call it? They say the team with the best winning percentage, but whatever.
Here's the thing. Mm-hmm. And here's the thing that killed me today. The J Sky Sports announcer said the Carp failed in their bid to lead interleague in winning percentage.
Yeah, I was going to write my story the same way at the office. I'm like, forget this. But this is the Hawks winning again. Yeah.
But they didn't.
Yes.
They tied.
It's true. It is true.
So,
they tied.
So, but they keep saying, you know, and my colleague at work was going, why are you going nuts about this thing that's really not important? And I said, baseball is very binary.
Mm.
Baseball is, you're safe, you're out, it's a strike, it's a ball. It doesn't matter what you do.
Right.
It's a matter, you know, it's a hit or it's an error. It doesn't matter whether it looks like a hit or it looks like an error. It's got to be one or the other.
Everything is accounted for, yes.
Right. So when you have something that's clearly defined, such as winning percentage, and you have two teams that are 12-6, how can you say the Carp failed to lead interleague in winning percentage when they did? But that's what everybody was saying. And even Kyoto News, my organization, put out a list of the titled. I don't mind if you say the Hawks won interleague, because they gave it to them because they took 2 out of 3 from the team they tied with in head-to-head competition. That part I understand. But why do you then say that the Carp didn't lead the interleague in winning percentage? It's like saying, it's like saying, well, it's a sacrifice fly, but it's not a sacrifice fly.
Yeah, right. It was in the air, but it's not a sacrifice fly.
That's right. The runner scored from third, and the ball was hit in the air, and he tagged up after it was caught and scored. But we're not going to call it a sacrifice fly. We're going to call it a pop out, a fly out to first base.
Right. Yes, thank you. So, yeah, the Hawks won the game 7-4. They beat the Carp at Mazda Stadium. But I had one big question, and that was the Carp started rookie Yuta Nakamura, and the Hawks went with one of their backup reserve guys.
Well, you know, I know, guy's Hiroki, been around forever, yeah, Hiroki Yamada.
Yep. But the Carp got it. Obviously, Nakamura gave up some runs early, and they decided to go to Alan Curry out of the bullpen. Now, I'm thinking, okay, well, didn't you really want to win this interleague thing? Why didn't you, if Curry was going to pitch in the first place, why didn't you just start him?
Well, because, yeah, that's a good question, except that Nakamura is still in the starting rotation and Curry isn't. He was pushed out when Chris Johnson came back.
Well, yeah, well, whatever. He was going to throw, and you know he's more. I mean, if you wanted to win, I mean, basically, Nakamura, this is his first season pitching on the top team. I think it was a draft pick in 2013.
Yeah, I think he's in his third or fourth year, yeah.
So I think he's barely considered a rookie, maybe even, but
He is considered a rookie, yes.
If you were willing to throw Curry at all, I was just thinking, just why don't you start him and see if you can win this thing? And of course, the Hawks acted almost as if they didn't want to win it. They were bringing out the guy who won the game, Ken Okamoto. I got to be frank. I've never even seen this guy pitch on the top team before.
Well, yeah. Well, that's actually, I have seen him, and I kind of liked him, actually. But the thing is, you know what? This struck me, other than the choice of starting pitchers, you know what it looked like? Well, of course, the choice wasn't surprising because, league play resumes on Friday. And, you know, they want to start with the top of the rotation guy. So they throw out the two scrubs, we'll call them.
Yeah.
Although to be honest, I like Nakamura. I think he's got a future. He's got some. It's not overpowering stuff, but he's got good command and he's got a really nice slider, and I like it. And his fastball's got some late. It's not fast. It's not high speed, but it's got late life, and he knows what he's doing more or less. So I liked him, and Yamada has never really impressed me, but he's serviceable. But you know what attracted my attention is that basically neither of these guys got past 12 batters. So they use these guys, and then the thing was they were treating this game like it was a playoff game, other than using the scrubs. We're not going to let anybody get two looks at our relief pitchers. We're going to, you know, it was like a replay of Game 7 of the 2008 Japan Series. You know, we're going to just bring in one reliever after another because, you know, it was desperate. It was a fun game, actually, in some respects. I mean, it wasn't a great game, but it was fun in that respect, in that they were both, you know, it was like release the bullpen door, you know, bring out the next monster. It was fun in that respect because they both emptied the bullpens. I guess, of course, they could do that because they're not going to play for another 4 days. So
right, and this is, that's one of the reasons we wanted to hold the show, or the executive decision was made
by John Executive Gibson
to record the show on Sunday night here, so that we can get this stuff in. And I'm glad. And you know, Cebu finished 10-7, so the Lions were, I guess, third place. The Eagles were in fourth at 10-8, along with the Tigers. And that was another great game, the Eagles and the Tigers today. That was
indeed, man, Kishi, oh man, yeah, Kishi got into heaps of trouble, and he had heaps of strikeouts to get himself out of trouble.
Yep, great stuff. So
it was really fun. Yeah. Yeah, it was really fun.
I love it every year, and I'm gonna love it next year too. I can't wait. You know, I watch as many games as I can. It's really fun to turn on PL or Pauleague TV and to be able to see all the games.
the bummer is when the Central League's hosting and you only have the Tigers and the Giants on PL TV.
Yeah, that was a bummer.
But anyway, I like it because the other thing I like about it is the CL parks are closer to me. Tokyo Dome and Jingu are closer. So I get Pacific League teams at my doorstep pretty much.
True. All right, let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the Yomiuri Giants and their GM situation. And obviously, they set the franchise record for consecutive losses a week or the week before. And so this past week, they made a move, and we called it on the show last week. I said at least for sure that there was going to be a move, whether it was a PR person or something. That they were going to make a move, and they decided to do it with the GM, and I guess Tatsuyoshi Tsutsumi decided to step down. I don't know what the wording was. Our paper, for some reason, we didn't have a big story on it.
Surprise.
And a guy who's been known as the special assistant, Yoshitaka Katori, is now the new man in charge of the Giants as the GM, and he had quite the press conference. I sat down and watched most of it, but I just don't see this having a big impact right away. Of course, they started winning. Then they even had a combined no-hitter this past week on Wednesday. I'm sure he's looking to take credit for that, right?
They won his first game as GM because Sugano pitched that day.
Right. Picked a good day to take over then.
Indeed, yeah. Probably that was part of the plan. It was interesting in one respect, is that the typical Yomiuri Giants executive is somebody who is a newspaper guy or a sports business guy. Somebody whose basically job has been promoting Yomiuri events as a business.
Right.
And
say what you want to say. Basically, some guy who has absolutely
no practical background in baseball. Having said that, there are some guys there who are very, very sharp. But generally the past GMs have been newspaper editors. Okay. I say that Kiyotake was a newspaper editor. Mr. Yamagishi was a newspaper editor. Sports editor, essentially. Okay, now, Katori is a former ball player. He's a really sharp guy. I have a lot of respect for him. And this marks a departure for the Giants, having a former ball player in that role. And the interesting thing is also that he's not, you know, he also didn't spend his whole career with the Giants. He was traded. But I have to wonder if, and Contour is a guy who probably doesn't really care if he's GM or not.
Uh-huh.
My guess is he's very secure, and he's not somebody that Tsuneo Watanabe, the supposedly out-of-the-picture honorary chairman of the Yomiuri Shimbun.
He's the grand poobah.
He is the grand poobah, the generalissimo, can threaten or bully. So my guess is it's a highly unusual move for him to pick somebody in that spot, for the Giants to pick somebody in that spot who Watanabe cannot bully. So my guess is that Watanabe's influence is waning. Of course, we've said that about 100 times before. You know, he's got more staying power than Donald Trump. But I have to think that's the case, because basically he looks for people he can pull the strings on.
Well,
and I don't think he can do that with Katori. If Katori, yeah. If they jerk Katori around, he'll just say, "Okay, out of here. I've got better things to do."
Right. Well, they had sunk to fifth place in the Central League standings, which was only a game or so. And the thing I looked at in his presser was that he said, "Look, I'm looking to change things from top to bottom throughout the system to get the best results on the field." And that would just lead me to ask one question. Who's on second?
# high heat.
Oh, I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing. When Contrary was a coach, he gave me one of the most interesting... He was a head coach when Tatsunori Hara took over as Giants manager in 2002. And I asked him a kind of an unassuming question. It was a meaningless... I wasn't meaningless. I was doing a story about something unrelated to the Giants, but he said something that turned out to be spot on.
Uh-huh. What was it?
In that he was Hara's head coach, and he said to me, "No." I said, "I'll just spell it out." He said, "Our policy with manager Hara is that we're going to use the guys on the farm team are going to be part of the unit, part of our team."
Mm-hmm.
And he said it, but I had no idea that he meant it, because every team says that, and no until 2002, no team ever meant it less than the Giants, with the possible exception of the Hanshin Tigers and the Bay Stars, who were the minor leagues was kind of a, you know, sort of something of a gulag. Okay, so that basically they threw guys in the minors they didn't want to ever see again. But under Hara, they used, you know, players who did well in the minors, who had no track record, who had no political clout, were brought up and given opportunities. And that was so unlike the Giants. And I'm wondering if Contori had a role in that, because he was the first one. He spelled that out to me. And something I thought, you know, it's just lip service. But when Hara really revolutionized the way the Giants deal with their minor leaguers, we could see something quite different. Although I don't think that's an issue, but I wouldn't be surprised to see some breaks with tradition.
Okay. All right, and making a two-seam transition, I just want to rant. I want to take the time to rant a little bit about the review, the replay system. And I feel like we talk about this every year, so I guess there's no reason to put it on the shelf this year. I saw two plays at the plate this past week, and we've had a number of plays at the plate this whole season already. And I saw these two plays from several angles, and... a couple of the angles showed that the call should have been overturned on the field, and they weren't, and the umpires just stayed with their call. And I know you've said on previous shows that the umpires are very reluctant to overturn their own calls, and I understand this.
Well, they say that, yeah.
They say that. I think they're proving it too, because obviously these plays, they're close. That's why they're being reviewed. But upon further review, we saw that they should have been overturned. So I'm just suggesting that MPB follow the MLB model and just take it out of their hands. They're very protective hands. And most of the games, when they're played in the Kanto region anyway, everything can be centered in here in Tokyo, and they can have a replay center and just review and this, and then make the decision, and they tell the umpires what the call is, because it's not working when you have guys who are reluctant to overturn their own calls, and it's close enough that they get away with, and they just decide not to overturn the call.
I like to look at the calls, and I'm like anybody else, I want to see if, you know, the umpire got it right or wrong, and what was the actual play, because, you know, it's hard to make that call in the first place at high speed. And I understand, but my attitude when I watch it when you see a tag, what looks like a tag, do you see the contact? Is there any way there's a gap between the glove and the body? And very often, there you can't see because the glove's in front of the body. So you can't see if they're actually touching it. And so you look at various angles and you try to time it. When did he touch it? When did his hand touch home plate? Blah, 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 blah. It's really hard. I'm less certain of... And I love the video... I love having access to the video replay, but what I dislike is the one where you said... the player should go, wait, I was safe... Because it doesn't cost the team. The manager, first of all, the manager cannot ask for video replay in Japan. However, that doesn't stop them from asking for video replays in Japan. They come out of the dugout and say, look at it. And then, this is what gets me. It's not that they get some of them wrong. Because I think some of them even, you know, it looks good to you. But I'm asking myself, could this angle, is this foolproof? Most of them aren't. But my rant is really, okay, there's a close play at the plate. Then we wait. 30 seconds later, one of the managers steps onto the field and goes, hey, what's up, guys? And then the home plate umpire will raise his hand, and the other three umpires will join him in a meeting between home plate and the mound. And then three of the umpires will trot off the field. The other umpire will go and take a microphone to inform the crowd that the umpires have decided to replay the call. But they've just spent a minute on something that is essentially automatic. Close play at the plate. You know they're going to review it. Go off the field. Do it. Get it done. And stop wasting people's time.
Yeah, because I've seen, I'm sorry to interrupt. There have been a couple of times earlier in the season. I think we were watching
that
the
same wasn't
games.
An interruption. That's an interruption. Okay.
We were watching the same game, and that they took 10 minutes. And I think, okay, well, they're taking a long time because they're trying to figure out how to come out and tell the crowd what the call is going to be. And I'm thinking, you know what? 3 minutes. 3 minutes tops on these things. And if you can't decide by 3 minutes, then it is too close to call. Let's just leave it the way it was on the field. But don't make us wait for 10 minutes and then come out and not change the call. You know, that's nutty.
You know, I'm gonna add something here, which this is really blue, out of the blue. But we were talking the other day about what to do about slow games, and I think, and this may be really crazy, and anything new in baseball will drive people, you know, through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what they ought to do, I think one possible solution is to change baseball standings to a point system, like soccer.
Or,
you get 3 points for a win, 1 point for a draw. And you give a bonus point if you play a game under 2 hours and 45 minutes.
Never, it will never
both
see
teams.
Bonus points. Yeah.
I would love that. You know never. Why? Baseball is essentially geared up to reward teams to play slowly. The more, you know, the more relievers you use, the more tiny ways you game the system to take up more time and more time and more time, work in your advantage. What I want to do is give teams a disadvantage to doing that. Give them an advantage to going the other way and saying, is it worth our while to waste time?
Hey, look. 3 minutes, tops. Let's go. Let's get this game moving. I don't want to see any more of these long. And I think they should change this rule right away during the season, because I don't want to see it anymore. It's really, if they're not going to change, especially if they're not going to change the call. And whatever they can do. Yeah, a bonus point, fine. Let's go. Let's go.
Give the umpires a bonus. Okay, yeah. Give the umpires bonuses.
No, I don't want to get into that. That's not even open that can of worms.
Hey, well, put the lid back on that thing. Then we'd have those famous game threes of the All-Star games in Podunk Stadium,
that goes by a plate that's not swung out is a strike.
Exactly. Players are called out if they take a piece.
Strike one, you're out. Next.
Hashtag high.
And everyone's swinging at the first pitch. I love it.
Yeah. All right. Quite a few notes, actually, this week. Rakuten ace Takahiro Norimoto's historic streak ended at 8 consecutive games with double digits and strikeouts.
Mm-hmm.
On Thursday at Jingu, they lost 6-2 to the Swallows. I was thinking that at some point this game is going to be sacrificed for his record. And I think in a way it was, but it was close enough that it wasn't. But, you know, I saw some reports that said, because the winning pitcher was Judy Hara of the Swallows, and they said he outpitches Norimoto. And I was thinking, no, he didn't. I thought Norimoto had great stuff. He was throwing, and his stuff was so good that his catcher couldn't corral it.
he should have called on Pat Corrales.
Boom! That's not even really funny. Was he a catcher?
Yeah,
I thought he was. Yeah, that's almost funny. one day it will be funny. But I don't know
when
about pitching. Yeah, I think the results on the scoreboard said that the Swallows won, but I beg to differ to say that he outpitched. But
well,
8. He really had some nasty stuff going on that night. It just
okay.
Didn't work
unfortunately,
out
I did not have Fuji 1 on my TV, so I couldn't see it.
Yeah. So I think the final result skewed or tainted the reality. But anyway, Hata pitched really well, and he threw a complete game, so I'll give him that. But I'm not sure about the out-pitching part. And finally, Norichika Aoki, this is the show that you missed when we brought up the fact that he was really close to 2,000 hits. So he got that in a game that was Monday Japan time in a game against the Angels, and he came up with hits 2001 even, I think he got to. So congratulations to him. And
2001, a batting odyssey.
And
he's kind of a space cadet. So.
Well, you brought up the fact that the Chunichi players had been blowing past the milestone in recent years, and Aoki really like slowed down, got out of the car, took pictures, and then.
Wait, where's my selfie stick?
Yeah, so now he's in the Meikyu Kai. So congratulations to him. Hideki Kuriyama of the Fighters, he's the manager. He picked up his 400th managerial win. And then Alex Ramirez and Yoshinobu Takahashi of the Giants, Alex Ramirez of the Bay Stars also got their 100th wins as managers. And it was a real big thumping for the Bay Stars. They beat the Buffaloes 14-5, and really fun game for Alex, I think, to do it, to get number 100. So that's good for him. Let's go to fielding questions. All right, we have a question from our buddy Glenn in Tokyo. And man, I really like the topics that he brings up for us. I wish he'd submit a question every month for us, just for us to go through. So his entry this week is, how would you both rank the playing careers of all the current crop of managers? Best, worst, top three. So also, I'm a big fan of English football. We call it soccer. And we see a number of very successful managers in the game who either played very little at the top level or not at all. Has there ever been a manager like that in NPB, or do they pretty much have to be fan favorites or all-stars? You want to do the guys, have they, the guys usually...
Oh, do the last part first.
Right.
Oh, sure. Okay. Basically, I've lived in Japan a long time, and my head's pretty much stuck in the past, but I don't know a lot of the guys who managed. And I think of, there's one obvious case, yes, Toshiharu Ueda, who's in the Hall of Fame. He was a backup catcher, and he won 1,322 games as a manager. And in his career, he went to the plate 283 times.
But he did play.
He did play. I don't know anybody who didn't play. Riku Onemoto, who is number two in mind, he won 598 games as a manager, and he batted. He had 406 plate appearances in his career, but he's kind of more famous for being a front office executive. He was the guy who built the first Carp dynasty. He built the Lions dynasty, and he built the Hawks dynasty. And the other guy would be Yukio Nishimoto, and he was kind of a journeyman.
Mm-hmm.
But he won, I think, 1100 or 1200 games. And he had maybe 1100 or 1200 at-bats in his career, but I don't think that many. So it happens, but it's pretty much routine that the guy's got to be a star.
Yeah.
I think of the managers we have now, well, most of them, there's a couple of guys who were, I would say, journeymen.
Mm.
But you know, they were guys who hung on for a while.
Yeah, they played a long time for sure. Yeah.
Well, one of them didn't.
Most of them, I would say.
Most of them did. Yeah.
Okay. All right. In terms of the ranking, for me, I ranked them from 1 to 12.
Mm, me
and,
too.
I think from
having said that, I don't really have a clue about Shigekazu Mori's pitching career.
Yeah, I'm looking at his numbers.
Everybody else I knew, but him I don't remember very well.
Yeah, I don't either. But I would just say off the top of my head, and this was without looking at numbers or anything, I think it's razor close for me between Kudo and Kanemoto. I think there's not even, I mean, those two guys are just so far away from the other guys. It's like the other guys are on a 20, let's say there's a 25 story building. I think Kudo and Kanemoto are on the 24th floor working their way up to 25 as they manage. And the other guys are lost on the 15th floor and don't
know
where
they are. We're just talking about their active playing career, correct?
We're just talking about what they did as players.
Hmm.
So I think those are two, I think Kudo won.
Well, 200-plus games.
He won 200-plus games as a pitcher. He played for more than 20-something years over parts of
bunch
four
of
decades.
MVPs, series MVPs.
Incredible achievements, noteworthy. Mm. He's Hall of Fame, you know.
Yeah, Hall of Fame, first ballot. Kanemoto is going to be a Hall of Fame, first ballot in 5 months' time.
Yeah, these guys.
Those two guys. I think Kanemoto, because his career is a little more exceptional.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Is I picked Kanemoto first because he had that consecutive innings streak, games played, and I mean, both of these guys did things that it's going to take quite the achievement to break their records. What they did, you know, the consecutive innings played, Kudo winning all those MVPs, winning Japan Series. Mm. He wasn't the greatest pitcher. He was just a winner. So that's why I went with Kanemoto. I thought his achievement was, you know,
Iron Man
and all that.
Well, yes and no. I think you could go either way. But I think Kanemoto is, more of an outstanding thing.
Yeah, I said it was razor thin. I think we're splitting hairs because these guys, you know, one was a pitcher, one was a position player. I think they could easily
be
tied. Yeah, yeah. And then, so I guess the number, it's number three who's really the big challenge. And for me, it was really close, but I picked the aforementioned Tomu Ito.
Me too.
Wow. And I just think...
Well, Hall of Fame catcher, yeah.
Yeah, his career as a catcher was fantastic. So number four for me was Alex Ramirez, being the only foreigner to have accumulated 2,000 hits.
Yeah, he had 300 home runs or so. So yeah, that's pretty rare.
Yeah,
that's Hall of Fame area. He's very likely gonna end up in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
because he's popular and likable. That's a huge thing for us reporters.
Yeah. For me, number five. Then it gets into really fuzzy area with guys whose careers are I don't know. I think I guess number five for me is Yoshinobu Takahashi, but it could be Hatsuhiko Tsuji of the Lions. I don't know. Who do you have at number five?
I have number three. I have Tsuji ahead of Ramirez. Although Ramirez is probably going to end up in the Hall of Fame, and so that's probably a mistake. I just think of Tsuji as being that, you know, the offensive and defensive force for a team that won a whole lot of Japan series.
Oh, you mean at number four, because you had Ito the same.
That's correct.
Number four. Okay.
That's correct. And Ramirez fifth. But I wouldn't argue if anybody thought Ramirez was better because of all that offense. I have Fukuda, who was very much like Tsuji.
Mm-hmm.
Very similar player. When I came when I first started doing Japanese baseball 25 years ago, really getting into it, we had this huge number of great second basemen in the Pacific League, Tsuji and Fukuda, and so on and so forth, and it was just amazing. And Tsuji was very much, or Fukuda was like that. I have Takahashi after him, but again, that could be a mistake too. I have Koichi Ogata after Takahashi. He was a player I really liked. Again, offensive, defense. I didn't know what to do with Mori.
Yeah, I, you know, well, don't go too far. I had, at number seven, I had Fukuda there. And then, like I said, there was a bunch of guys whose careers, I mean, you know, they're just mishy-mashy. Hideki Kuriyama at number eight.
Oh, I had him at 12.
And, well, I had Mitsuda Manaka of the Yakult Swallows at 12 because he was really a bench guy for a long time.
Well, he had a bench guy for a long time. Kuriyama wasn't good enough to be a bench guy for a long time.
Well, okay. And
he had a very short career as a regular, and as soon as Yakult got a really good manager, basically his career was over.
Right. Where did you have Nashida? I had him at number 9.
I had him at number, because I didn't know, I think Nashida is good at 9. Mori, I don't know, I just can't say. He was a reliever, but I've never even looked at his record. Nashida was a gold glove catcher, so, you know, that's got some value. He caught for a long time.
You know, for me, Ogata, I had him at 10, and I just thought he was a really, really good pro, and that his just physically, he just kept getting injured, and if he didn't do that, if he could have stayed on the field more, health-wise, he would have been a Hall of Fame player. He would have had 2,000 hits. He would have played for more than 15 years.
I don't know. His problem, he had the same problem that Kanemoto had, is that they both came up under Koji Yamamoto, who thought the purpose of every young player of potential was to be used as a platoon outfielder.
Right, right.
And so basically he had five outfielders.
But he could run, he could throw, he could steal bases.
Yeah, smart player. I really
loved him.
Yeah, I liked him as a player. I liked him better than Takahashi, but he didn't get the opportunities early.
Yeah, early, and then when he did, he ended up getting injured. So yeah, I had Manaka at the bottom, and at the top I had Kanemoto. And
yeah, Kuriyama was really an awful player. He was an awful player. Having watched him and being a Swallows fan, he was good at he had a flair for making dramatic catches, diving to get balls that were really hit close to him, mm-hmm. because he had tremendously bad jumps. He wasn't slow, but he just had the worst jumps in it ever. So his trademark was making a diving catch because he lost the ball or he misjudged the ball.
Right.
But he had good hands. But having said that, he had really good hands.
Now, I can tell you this. My all-passion team would be a little bit different, but I think Kanemoto would still be up there at the top. But it's Kuriyama who, when he loses a game, man, it looks like he is going to gnash his teeth all night and maybe try to kill somebody. He's the kind of guy, it seems to me, like if they lose, he doesn't go home. He goes somewhere and takes a bat and beats something with it, you know, a punching bag or something like that, even if it's something like that, or a wall or something. In fact, I heard tonight that Ito kicked a toilet, Tsutomu Ito kicked a toilet and hurt his foot because he was so mad that he lost that game tonight. So, yeah, I read that in a Hochi article tonight. So, I mean,
must be true then.
My all-passion team would be a little bit different. I'd probably have Takahashi at the very bottom, along with Manaka. I think those are two of the coolest customers you see. They don't get too excited about very much.
Well, in Manaka's case, it's a plan. He does get worked up, but
he's got the cool exterior.
Well, he keeps it cool when he needs to keep it cool.
All right.
You know, I find Kanemoto to be, I love Kanemoto as a manager. He's gone from that cool and passionate about his preparation guy and showing no emotion as a player to a guy who's really animated and smiles.
All right. Well, we're cool too. We're going to make a cool exit here. Thank you very much, Glenn, for the question. Anyone else who has a question, hit us up at yakyujohn@gmail.com. Send us a high heat question on Twitter at JBW Podcast, or leave us a note on the Facebook page. Leave us a comment and look for us on iTunes. We will talk to you next week. There won't be very much baseball this week. Games don't start until Friday, but when they do, enjoy your baseball.
And thanks for sticking with us, and see you at the ballpark, especially if you're going to Yokohama on Monday.